It's the first Saturday of the month, so I'm joined by opinionated Islanders Alan Knight, and standing in for Alex Stone is Bruce Davis Goff. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you know where Alex is this time around?
No, I don't. I sent him a text saying, are you in Queensland, Whakatane or Tanzania? and didn't hear back, so he's obviously somewhere without cell phone reception.
He has been away a lot lately,
but maybe he'll get back here eventually. Much more knowledgeable and wise, I'm sure, as a result. So we've just been talking to Denise Roche from the Green Party about this Labor-Green Memorandum of Understanding. What's your take on it, guys?
Oh, dear. It just looks like one set of cosy, petulant, middle-class guys getting cosy with another set of middle-class petulant types. It's hardly inspiring. There's no fire in the bellies, which I think is a bloody shame. We can tell the tide is turning. You know, the 30 years of neoliberalism, it's dead now, and it needs putting out of its misery. But is the current state of the left wing in this country good enough to actually put it out of its misery? I think not.
Well, I think you've got to look at it relatively. I think a lot of people will be, you know, quite excited to see what could be a viable opposition to National. You're right. What seems to be missing is a bit of a get up and go. There's no sort of Jeremy Corbyn, Sanders figure there to motivate
them. Maybe there are further down in the ranks, but that sort of fieriness is not rising to the top. And, you know, Andrew Little, he just fills me with inertia. I'd like to believe in him, but I can't.
I mean, I'd really love to see some stunning policies come out. I'd like them to turn around and go, yes, we're going to make education free, tertiary education. We're going to pay for, 3 years or something. We can afford it. We'll stop spending money on stupid, great, big military things, you know, because we don't need that. Drug legislation, that obviously needs to change.
Yes.
People have been crying out about that for years, and it's happening all around the world. But New Zealand, we just seem to be like, New Zealand dragging its feet. And you can't imagine any progressive policies coming out of the National Party. Of course, they really just seem to be there to feather their own nests and those of their friends. But, you know, I think at least it is a spark of hope. There's now the figures are now looking like, you know, if it did come to an election and they did really pull finger and give it the great old heave-ho, there's a slim chance they could unseat National.
I'd love to see that happen, because the idea of National in the fourth term is really just too horrible to contemplate. I mean, they're bad enough now. It's bad enough when any party gets a third term, but a fourth term, no. You know, and it would amaze me that any National supporter could even think that that was a good idea. Just as I was amazed to think that anyone could have thought 8 years ago that Labour would want a fourth term. It would be a disaster for them. The thing is, the longer you're in this country, the longer you're going to be out. And, you know, it's... If only we could have a decent opposition, then at least things could change a little.
You know, I'm kind of amazed that National voters are, I guess it's that the me sort of thing. It's all about me, 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 and feathering my own nest and looking after my own, and not really looking outside and seeing the bigger social picture. You know, the thing that alarms me is people living in cars because of the housing policy that's happened around Auckland. But are they doing anything about it? Absolutely.
And they're doing something about it. They're pretending
harder.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah. What housing crisis? There is no housing crisis. Go to Wynn.
But this is what happens when the political tide changes. The tide goes out, and all you're left with wriggling around on the sand are the true ideologues, the people who treat their political allegiances the same way they'd support a sports team, which I always think is a dumb idea. There's a time to wave the flag for a particular political agenda, and there's a time to just put the flag away and admit it's over. But then again, the left suffers from that as well. All through the last 30 years, we've had left-wing people moaning and bitching and never sort of looking back and admitting that the reason we ended up with a neoliberal agenda was because the previous Labour agenda ran onto the rocks, just bogged itself down in trivia and corruption, and needed to get changed.
Well, some would argue in New Zealand that the left wing really got sold out at the time of Roger Douglas.
Well, it did. That was possibly one of the most extraordinary things that a Labour Party could possibly have adopted, market strategies like that. It was very, very odd. I wasn't here at the time, but, you know... hearing about it now, it's a very, very strange thing that happened there.
You know, as we understand, it really was the end of David Long. He couldn't stomach that sort of stuff, even though he was had a hand in getting it rolling.
So it does seem, doesn't it? I mean, like at the end of the last Labor government and now, that the main political strategy seems to be of opposition, seems to be wait for the government to stuff up and fall over. But
and then
rather than try and help
hands,
it fall.
Yeah, but it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't appear that that's going to happen anytime soon, does it?
Not with somebody as dull and pedestrian as Andrew Little in charge of things.
I think also, I don't think Andrew Little's got anywhere near the level of wile and cunning that John Key possesses. There was a good article, the finest actor of his generation, and in some ways, you know, that's true. He can sell bullshit. He really can. He can stand there in front of the microphone and tell a complete porky with a slightly shit-eating smug grin on his face. And it just gets lapped up, and I'm just unbelievable. I see photograph after photograph of that man with his mouth open, and honestly, you know,
Well, they say whenever a politician begins to look like the cartoons of them, then there's definitely time they need to go. You know, it's like that old thing, when you've been travelling long enough that you look like your passport photo, it's time to go home and rest. And the same is true of politicians. When they start to look like the grotesque caricatures that the cartoonists come up with of them.
Well, I mean, I used to agree the tide's turning. And I sort of think, you know, there's that old joke, isn't it? How do you tell if a politician's lying? Oh, they'll be speaking. And for elected representatives who are meant to represent our society and, in fact, be there to improve our society, really, how could we have such a bunch of tossers, in there? It seems to attract the lowest kind of scum-sucking, pond-bottom-dwelling feeders in the world. Wouldn't it be neat if you could be proud of your politicians? I think, why can't that be so? I mean, I'm a big Bernie Sanders fan. You know, I'm a Bernie bro, as I get called, but I think, you know, that's just the media slagging it off. The media is starting to turn there. I put a lot of hope in Bernie Sanders because I see if he gets to be president and starts to enact the ideas he's talking about, it will be world-changing. Certainly, we hopefully won't see the US being such a meddlesome beast in the Middle East and South America and, well, pretty much everywhere, really. They've got military bases left, right and centre.
Although maybe, I mean, that American thing, I mean, it's a bit beyond its scope, but I mean, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, there is also the potential that if Trump gets through, that actually we might just see the United States withdraw into itself.
Yes.
And just go, we're just going to hunker down, build our walls.
Like they were trying to do in the 1930s, before world events kind of dragged them out of their little sort of isolationist position and then sort of turn them into the world's superpower. But it would be lovely to see them do that. The trouble is, and this I noticed there was one local blogger was giving support for Trump.
Oh, Holmes,
it didn't surprise anybody. But this idea that, he's an outsider and he challenges the established political structure. It's all very well to say that, but I think what they're missing there is that the people guarding that political structure are also the people holding the checks and balances that make sure that the whole structure doesn't fall to bits. It's one thing to say, oh, yes, I'm an outsider, but if you go tinkering with the machinery and the whole thing spins out of control, that's the machinery that's kept America from descending into civil war for the last 180 years or whatever it is. You wouldn't mess with that lightly. Because America could, and this is of course the interesting thing. Trump becomes president. How conceivable is it that America would actually spin out of control? Given that it's sort of balanced now on a left-right balance, where really only 1% generally chooses who's going to be the president, could that whole structure tip over? And given how heavily armed a lot of people are. And how strangely angry and paranoid and frightened so many of them seem to be.
It's a frightening prospect, isn't it?
Yeah.
I very much doubt he'll become president. I mean, I hope against everything he'll get there. To me, he just seems like a cheap huckster, a trickster, a showman with a bag. I know the best words. I know all the words. And he just talks absolute bloody nonsense, really. If you break down to what actually the man's saying, he's nothing.
And I thought the best description of him was somebody said he's like the comments section of a YouTube video made human.
Well, he is.
Well, Jeff, one of our announcers here on the station, is in the United States at the moment and went to a Trump rally last week, you know, to kind of get the experience of
yes,
it.
Yes, I saw the post he put
out. Yeah, and it was interesting because what he was saying about it was that, you know, while we see the sound bites and, you know, the craziness, I mean, if you've seen the snake poem, that's extraordinary, Trump reading the snake lyric, but when he said that at the rally, when you get that for an hour, he said even the trumpeters are walking out the door because just an hour of stream of consciousness nonsense is more than anyone can take.
Mm. Sounds a bit like a Destiny Church revival meeting.
Ooh, oh, yes. Somebody posted a horrible thing yesterday, speaking of the Destiny Church, of somebody had emailed them asking for some support for a homeless centre in Auckland. And the reply that they got from the Destiny Church was really quite extraordinary. Quite apart from the fact that grammatically it was appalling. It was just a mess of spelling errors and grammatical errors. The gist of it was, oh, look, we'd love to help, but really people need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And if they're if they don't live right, according to God's word, then it really is their own fault.
Yeah, well, that's right.
That they're in the position they're in. So sorry, but no.
It's fairly safe to say if they're not towing the God party line, they deserve every bit of a whop-ass they get.
Yes.
So let's return to the local issue. I mean, we were talking before about housing, and, you know, while we've got that housing issue ongoing, there's this kind of idea floating around as well that is crossing into our governance structures. So, you know, we've got the government and the council at odds, and I mean, even within the council, I mean, you've got this whole mess around the unitary plan, what that's going to mean for housing intensification. You've got the government saying that they might overturn the unitary plan. I mean, we're potentially facing, you know, government control of the council.
It's a terrifying prospect, and particularly since if they do that, they will attempt to spin it to say this is how the super city is working so well. That would require some serious spin on it to convince us of that, if they have to actually come in and overturn it. And here we are only, what, two terms into the super city, already a complete disaster, and they're talking about bringing in commissioners to run the place.
Yep, and the little act monkey, Rodney Hyde, was sort of really responsible in a lot of ways for the mess we find
out today.
Sadly,
he was, yes. It's not a good look. Will we even have elections? Some people are suggesting that the elections might be suspended this year. Although local board elections, probably not. They will go ahead.
So, yeah, we're not far away now. Candidate nominations opening on the 15th of July.
Closing on August 12th,
August 12th, yeah. So we're really only, kind of 2-3 months, and we'll know what's going to, who's standing and what's going to be happening.
And apart from the perennially amiable Sherrin Brown, nobody's really said a word about any plans to do anything.
Now, I'm sure I've heard, although I don't know where, that the other current board candidates are all considering re-standing.
Hmm. Good, okay.
Though I can't remember
all
where I
them?
Heard that, apparently.
Even the ones who
don't turn up.
Don't turn up and do very much.
Make no comments on
who
anything
were just
never
there
seen
to,
in public.
Keep the ticket looking consistent last time around. We really don't know here. Either there's an awful lot of powder being kept dry, or there really isn't any powder at all.
A complete lack of interest, you think?
Yes. Because after all, you know, two terms in, we find ourselves with, okay, we tried a board who said yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir to Auckland City, and we didn't like that. And now we've got a board who just go, we can't work with Auckland City, this is ridiculous, and digging their heels in. And that isn't really working for us either. So clearly the entire model is flawed, because I don't see a third way in which this could be done.
Independence, really, only That would be the only other option to that.
Or is there somewhere in the middle? I mean, as you say, we've had boards, and because the boards have tended to use, well, the first board used the kind of majority system to, you know, to ensure that one direction was taken. The second board, I mean, the people who were elected were all leaning a different direction. So we haven't really had a board where they've kind of worked these things through.
I think if you've got any candidate running this time round going, come on, folks, let's see if we can find a third way, they're going to have to sell it really hard, and they're going to have to come up with something pretty convincing.
I think, you know, on Waiheke Island, if you're going to stand for the local board, I think you've got to realise you need a skin around about 8 inches thick. Just because, you know, like you and me, Alan, a lot of people on the island are very opinionated and have no problems at all in voicing their opinions in loud, aggressive public manners.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, you've had to be very brave to want to take that role on in the first place.
Yeah, it's not even politics. I remember Greg Treadwell saying when he was editing the Gulf News that he would be stopped by people in the street and in the supermarket who would tell him very loudly that it was all his fault.
Probably is.
And this is the amazing thing, of course, you know, you get voted onto the local board and within 5 minutes those same people will be telling you it's all your fault. Why aren't you doing something about this, that, and the other?
It does seem to. But I mean, you saw that a lot, didn't you, with the Explore Ferry thing? I mean, you know, everything is sheeted back to the local board.
Yeah. Which, given that they have pretty much no power, is amazing how much they seem to
cop the blame.
Yeah.
The thing that is still of interest and curiosity to me is around this housing thing. It's been interesting this year. Typically in winter, it's a time when you get a lot of houses coming up for short, medium-term rental. People want to sit on it until Christmas, and you get the odd long one. But I'm still seeing quite a lot of families actually really, really struggling, and just anecdotally, people struggling to find rental accommodation. And of
frankly,
course,
if you're the kind of person who has a property on the island and you put it up available for a 10 months of the year rental, you're a bastard and you should be ashamed of yourself. There's this idea on the island that there's the half of the year when the employers remember who you are, and then there's the cold bit when the landlords remember who you are, and that is far from good enough. I mean, I'm just looking around just in the neighbourhood of Onitangi where I live and just watching all the shutters go up on houses which will now sit empty and damp and cold right through until November, when suddenly people remember that they exist again.
This comes back to the financial incentivisation around it. So if you've got a house like that, you actually are better off taking the big money over summer and not putting tenants in over winter. You know, your property doesn't get damaged, there's less bills, and we've done the figures on it, and it's a little bit here or there is whether financially it's better one way or the other, but as far as your property not getting worn out, it's actually, there's advantages there. So the whole thing really is tilted in favour of people who want to pay for their mortgage or get a good return on their investment. And of course, that's what they're going to do. It's not like suddenly everyone's going to have a rash splurge of social conscience and go, no, look, I want to give my house to a local family who are in need. As much as we'd like that to be the case, it's just not pushed that way. And
mind you, there is of course considerable bad faith on both sides of the renting debate. I've known friends on the island who've rented out properties and had those properties just trashed by idiots. You know, people punching holes in the drywall, breaking windows. One friend of mine, he rented his house out and it had to be fumigated not once but twice after the tenant moved out because the tenant lived in filth. I've got friends who didn't get the rent paid, took them ages to get the tenants out, they lost out on it. But then on the other side, I've got some other friends on the island who are currently taking a case to the tenancy tribunal because they moved out of a house and the property agent immediately went, right, I see an opportunity here to have the whole place professionally cleaned, but we'll take it out of the tenant's pocket. And these folks are going to have to go to the tenancy tribunal to have that overturned. Having sat in on a tenancy tribunal thing, these things rarely go the landlord's way. unless you really do have, you know, some sort of pit of club wins squalor and gruesome drug behaviour, when the tenancy will go, yeah, okay, well, that's, you know, you've had some really horrible tenants in there. But generally, this sort of thing of going, oh, you've got a bit of honest wear and tear on the house, right, you've got to pay for all of that, and it's just seen as an excuse to get your house renovated. I've seen people do this, and I've sat in on the tribunals and watched the way they shoot them down and go, don't be ridiculous. You want to rent properties out to people, don't come to us saying, oh, you know, there's a bit of a smudge on the wallpaper and we need the whole place redone, because this is what happens. And those people who try, the property agents that try to do that are scum. You know who you are if you're listening.
Strong words.
Yes.
Yes. So, again, I mean, we're going to come back to the local board stuff as we continue through the year. I mean, so what,
assuming anything actually happens.
Well, yes. I mean, so perhaps, so we, it might be, could well be 2 months. So next month, July, nominations still not open. I presume people will be starting to make noises by then. But certainly once we get into the following month, it'll be all on.
Will we perhaps see some real revival campaigns, a few blasts from the past, you know, back in the real old days?
I'm thinking, I wonder if the radio station is actually going to be hosting some lively, fiery debates.
I mean, we have talked about it. So, I mean, it's certainly our intention. Last time we hosted a live candidates meeting, broadcast that, we want to do that again. We've always kind of had comprehensive coverage, so all the candidates will be invited.
That was the one at Artworks where the incumbent board didn't turn up.
Yes, that was
most of amusing.
One.
Yes, remember that one.
Yeah, so
too much of a media talk fest. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll be, you know, inviting all the candidates to record their statements, inviting them all in for interviews, hosting a meeting. So yep, hope to have comprehensive coverage.
Oh, those recorded statements. We've seen some classics over the years. There ought to be a sort of a greatest hits compilation. It'd be horrible to have to try and go through them all. I assume you have them all archived.
Yes, we've got them all there. Yeah.
We should have a sort of a competition. Which is the most disastrously rambling and incoherent?
Oh, I know the answer to that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah, I think I know the answer to that one.
Yes, I know the answer to that one. I'm not going to say it because he could stand again. It was difficult to record.
Yes.
Yes.
And will we see, again, because this has happened in the past, those odd candidacies where you get people from some completely random part of Auckland who have no connection to the place but decide they want to run for local board here?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that last time.
There have been a few of those. There was one turned up during the 2010 election. There was somebody, no connection to the island, who decided they wanted to...
That's right. She was standing in a number of boards, just decided to put her head in all over the place.
But then again, we had that perennial candidate on the island who used to do that for other places. Alan Davies, yes. The Waiheke's least successful politician. I'm rather sad that he sort of retired from doing that, because there was a time when... Sorry, my dog's woofing there. There was a time when Alan Davies couldn't bear to see a ballot paper that didn't have his name on it, and it was always rather amusing seeing him run.
Time will tell.
Yeah, I'd like to see a bit of local colour as well. I think, you know, I'm all for the bring back Noble Angelo school of thought.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, that would be sort of fun, because back when he was in on the local board, we didn't really have Facebook to work with. And, you know, I did my best at the time to beat him like a rented mule. But with Facebook, it would be way more fun.
Yeah, look, I know, basically, I need some good, like, Photoshop material, you know, set loose with this year.
All right, so we'll call a halt there before we go into too deep into character assassination. So, opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Bruce Davis-Goff.
Thank you very much.
We'll have you back on the first Saturday of next month.